This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Myers in over the middle there for Tanev on the far side. Now for Army, it's needs a check, moves in, shoots and scores! Joel Armia hit the post and in! Winnipeg has taken a 4-3 lead, just like that, as we come back from break. 8:22 remaining in the third, and again, Winnipeg scoring for the first time since the first. Back to the line again, kept in by Pavelski. Now up top for Vlasic, wrist shot toward the net, blocked in front, rebound, they score. Furious action for San Jose. Winnipeg could not get it out and passed center ice. We're tied at four. And they win the draw to the Jets. Here's Ehlers across the line, moved in, let a shot go in and bounced off Burns' stick and wide. Rebound into where the corner, gathered up by Little, back toward the line for Bufflin, winds up, doesn't shoot, Bufflin still has the puck, shortens down on the stick, going wide there on Burns, sit it out in front of shot, they score! Brian Little took the pass from Dustin Bufflin, and shot it past Arundel, and the Jets win it in overtime here tonight. Jets win! Jets win! Jets win in overtime!
Those are words you have not heard this year thus far. Paul Edmonds with a call as only Paulie can call. The Jets 5-4 overtime victory last night in San Jose. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. A bit of a later edition of the program. Mr. Ginsburg, the man on my far left, Ezra Ginsburg, joining me in studio on this Wednesday night. A bit of a later edition, but not quite as late as last night's Jets-Sharks game, a game that was quite entertaining, as long as you don't like defense. There wasn't a ton of defense in the game, but a 5-4 Jets victory. They blow the 3-0 lead. They blow the 4-3 lead, but at the end of the game, they get the 2 points via the OT victory for the Winnipeg Jets.
And, Drew, we all saw that coming, right?
Oh, undoubtedly. A team that has only scored one goal a game all weekend, all of a sudden, we knew they were just going to bust out like that.
4 goals in their last 4 games. They only scored one against Chicago and Minnesota, only one against Calgary. They got that 1-0 shutout on Sunday night versus Vancouver, and then they erupt for 5 goals, as you mentioned, Drew. A really exciting game. You had a lot of Jets fans. Shout out to the Grieb family, who was in attendance, of course, with Carter's jersey. It was a really exciting atmosphere there at SAP Center. And, you know, the Jets just seemed to always have a response. And it looked like, you know, early in that third period that the tide was really turning after San Jose had tied it up 3-3. And then it looked like maybe Joel Armia had the game winner there midway through the third period, and then obviously the Sharks tie it up late in the third period. But Brian Little, unbelievable. I mean, Brian Little, let's be honest, he's had trouble scoring goals this year, and that was arguably his best game of the year. And, you know, for a guy, you know, who has been criticized at times for his lack of goals this year, I thought that line, that second line, was by far the Jets' best line. Nikolaj Ehlers, yeah, I thought, was flying all night. Joel Armia was great.
Yeah, Nikolaj Ehlers had a rocket attached to him all night long. Matthew Perreault gets the opening goal, sort of a fluky deflection, but you'll take it any way you can. You're absolutely right, Ezzy. That Perreault, Little, and Ehlers line, to me, was the driving force for the Winnipeg Jets last night.
When you think about it, Drew, we haven't seen that line a lot together, you know, over the last year. And, you know, it's a small line, but it's a very fast and skilled line. And really, that's the identity of this team, and it paced this team. Let's be honest here, Blake Wheeler didn't have his best game. He took some penalties,
two penalties, and
he seemed just a little bit off. So I'm not saying necessarily that he had an awful game, but he didn't have one of his, you know, excellent games that you've come accustomed to this year, especially since Mark Scheifele has gone out of the lineup and he switched over to center.
Let me stop you right there. The fact that, you're right, Blake Wheeler has been the driving force for the Winnipeg Jets, particularly since Scheifele goes out. For the Jets to win a game without Blake Wheeler at his peak or at a very good level on a night when he was off. He definitely was off last night. That says a lot about the Winnipeg Jets. It says that that second line needed to step up, and they did step up. I mean, Joel Armia also had a very good game, I thought, for the Jets. You know, and he's turned into be a relatively consistent performer. He's never going to be get all the flashy headlines, but you notice him a couple times per game, each and every game. And but you're absolutely right, Ezzy. Ehlers, he looked like he had a rocket attached to him all night long. Brian Little gets the game-winning goal for the Winnipeg Jets. And Matthew Perreault always is, you know, in doing the little things to help a team become victorious.
Yeah, and let's not forget about the goal that he scored in the first period to make it 3-0.
Sure.
And that was an important goal, right?
The power play goal for Brian Little with Thomas Hertl having being given the 5-minute major for boarding on Dmitry Kulikov.
Right, and you know the Jets had power play chances before that, Drew, and it looked like maybe the Sharks were going to kill off that penalty mm-hmm. and get a lot of momentum. But you know, on that topic, by the way, I know this has been a hot topic on the station here today. I mean, that's a hit from behind. I mean, if you're a hockey coach, that's what you show your kids. That's a textbook board.
Right.
So for anybody who's saying that, you know, that wasn't boarding
no,
he shouldn't have been kicked out of the game, I don't think he should be suspended. But for anybody who thought that shouldn't have been a 5-minute major, that's ridiculous.
I don't think anybody, I haven't heard anyone say that it wasn't a 5-minute major and a game misconduct, because it clearly was.
The Sharks media was apologizing quite a bit.
You know, whatever. The homers are going to be, homers are going to homer. I'm not too worried about that. What I think people might be misconstruing in the course of the hit, and Kevin Sawyer addressed this on the broadcast, as you know, next to Dennis Bayak, and I thought Kevin was 100% right in addressing that.
Yeah, Kevin did a great job last night, as always,
saying that Dmitry Kulikov and all NHLers, it's become an epidemic throughout the NHL that they put themselves into a vulnerable position by having their back by facing the boards in the manner in which they did. Now,
you still have to hold back, though, when you see the player's numbers.
Thomas Hertl is 100% to blame for that hit. It's a bad hit. It's a textbook bad hit, and he got the punishment he deserved. I think what Kevin Sawyer's point is, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm deciphering what he said, is that when I grew up playing hockey, when you grew up playing hockey, when hockey was played in the 80s and the 90s, players would never put themselves in a position to be facing the boards like that. If they were up against the boards, they would always be doing so at a bit of an angle, so that a guy, if somebody was reckless, like Thomas Hertl was, and again, I want to say it again so everyone hears me, Thomas Hertl's hit was terrible. It was a reckless hit on a vulnerable player. I think what Kevin Sawyer is saying is that players used to not put themselves into that vulnerable situation. And I agree with Kevin's point that players should go back to positioning themselves against the boards in a manner that's more protective, because there is always going to be the possibility of some jackass trying to drive you through the boards when your back is to them.
Right, but that's nothing new. I mean, you always have to protect yourself.
Well, but
that's not something that's emerged in the last 5 to 10 years. That's always been a case.
No, but I think it is. I think players used to never go into the boards with their face against the boards. I think that used to be something that you'd never see players do. Now you see it as on a regular basis, you see hits like Thomas Hertl's hit on Kulikov, because players are more reckless in putting themselves in vulnerable situations.
Right, I agree with that. I just don't think that's a new phenomenon.
Well, regardless, I think it's a new phenomenon over the last 5 years or 10 years. I don't think it was a thing 20 years ago.
Well, I mean, if you want to go back 20 years, we weren't doing the show 20 years ago.
15 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't think it was as prevalent as it is today. That's all my point is.
Yeah, that was Kevin's point, and I agree. And in this particular case, that was a turning point, and the Jets went up 3-0. It looked like the Jets were really going to go ahead, maybe go up 4-0 or 5-0, but we talked about it. I mean, Joe Pavelski gives them a little life there late in the first period. But needless to say, I mean, that had a big impact on the game, Drew, not only because the Jets scored in the power play, because they lost Kulikov for the remainder of the game, had to go to 5 defensemen, and they also might miss him tomorrow night against Anaheim.
Right, and we don't know the status of that both Dmitry Kulikov is sort of what I would describe as questionable for the game.
Yeah, that's what Paul Maurice said today. He's questionable.
And Tobias Enstrom is probable for the game tomorrow against the Ducks. But they did call up Tucker Poolman for precautionary sake. Of course, Ben Sherrod is still with the team in the press box. I mean, the Jets last night, I thought I don't think they were that good last night. They got five goals, and you get five goals, that's a pretty good thing. They only had 23 shots on goal. I mean, they scored three goals on six shots in the first period. When the Sharks got that 3-1 goal, when Pavelski scored late in the first period, I was not surprised to see them complete the comeback and get it all the way back to 3-3. At 3-0, I did not feel as though the Jets had that game in hand, because I thought San Jose really was doing a lot of good things in an effort to get back into the game.
Well, the Sharks are a great team. I mean, right now they're battling for their playoff lives, Drew, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago that this was a Stanley Cup contending team going up against the Penguins for the Cup, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, as far as I was concerned, you know, last night I expected the Sharks to have that pushback after they went down 3-0, as you mentioned. I mean, the second period, Drew, was completely one-sided. The ice was tilted mm-hmm. in the Sharks' favor. You know, Logan Couture kicked it off there with that nice goal that, you know, Connor Hellebuyck would like to have back.
Yes.
And then Chris Tierney scores with, as we mentioned, Wheeler was in the penalty box, if you remember, with that high sticking penalty, and Wheeler, you saw, was very frustrated if you watched the game last night, which obviously we did. So, I mean, it was a fairly even game. It could have been anybody's game. The game went to overtime, and
sure.
We know that in overtime the Jets have had a lot of struggles, but we talked about this, you know, on Saturday's show. I mean, we knew that the Jets were overdue for a win. I mean, a team with this much speed and skill,
yeah.
We knew that they were due. They weren't going to go 0-10 this year
no. In
overtime. So, you know, a big win for the Jets.
Yeah.
But I expected the Sharks, to be in this game, because they've been absolutely red hot at SAP Center. They've got a great home record, and they're right in there with the LA Kings and those other teams in the Pacific Division, except for Vegas, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, that division is completely wide open after Vegas. So
yeah, no, the Sharks have been playing very good hockey, and it was a bad night for them in that they only get the 1 point on the scoreboard. Joe Thornton left the game late. We understand today that he's going to be out a minimum of 2 weeks. Really did sound ominous that it could be longer than 2 weeks.
I don't know if you noticed this last night. You probably did, but Joe Thornton and Brian Little were going at it pretty good off of the faceoff circle there when Joe Thornton got kicked out. That was something to watch, and it was, you know, kind of sweet revenge for Brian Little that he got the OT goal, and Joe Thornton ended up leaving that game with the injury.
You know, there was an edge to that game that I was sort of surprised about, because these aren't what you would describe as traditional rivals. They play each other, you know, three times a year. This was the third and final meeting on the season, but there was... You know, there was more of an edge to that game than I would expect for two non-division rivals playing on a Tuesday night. There was some attitude, which is nice. And I think that's, to some extent, a function of the fact that, you know, we're in past mid-January now. You're getting closer to the crunch time of the season. And these two teams are beginning to get ready for the stretch drive, and as a result, the game got a little more heated than you might expect.
It had a playoff feel.
I wouldn't go that far.
The goaltending, well, I didn't say it was a playoff game. I said it had a playoff feel because it was a close game, and a playoff spot is on the line for the Sharks. I mean, the Jets are going to the playoffs. The Jets don't need this game as much as the Sharks do, but it was a very good game in that sense. Playoff feel more so because of how intensely it was played.
Well, I'll tell you what, after the Sharks tied it up at 4-4, so they tied that, you know, what point in the game was that when they tied it? There was about 3 minutes left. There was 4.5 minutes left. Neither team, I think, even tried to get anything close to a goal in the next 4.5 minutes, which just tells you the problem with the NHL's point system. I mean, the last minute of the game, the Sharks just kept the puck behind their own net, and the Jets were content just to stand there. Both teams were just like, okay, we're each going to get a point for the last 4.5 minutes. And it was... I mean, it's certainly not a rarity where you see teams are happy to get 1 point each. It was just so brazen in how neither team tried to do anything after the Sharks tied the game up at 4 goals apiece.
Well, you know what the solution to this is. If you give 2 points for a regulation win, it solves that problem.
Or if you give 3 points, you mean, for a regulation win.
Sorry, 3 points.
Yes, 3 points for a regulation win.
That's what I meant.
Last comment about last night's game goes to Connor Hellebuyck of the Winnipeg Jets. He was asked about what it's like to get the monkey off the back when it comes to getting a win in overtime.
Well, I felt pretty good. The guys, they played pretty good, and, you know, we earned that. That game was high octane. It was very fast paced, and, you know, it's exciting. Those games are fun, you know. Not ideal for the goalies getting scored on that much, but when we're winning an OT, I'm pretty okay with it.
Connor Hellebuyck addressing the media this morning, talking about last night's game. When we come back, we'll discuss the Jets and the Ducks. They're in action tomorrow evening, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Center, Botman's there to make the catch. And then Connor gets it back and fires it into the empty net.
That will salt this one away for the Winnipeg Jets. An overwhelming start to the game for Winnipeg. From that point on, I thought they defended well as Anaheim tried to make its push. Ducks had chances in this game.
That's from back in November, the first time the Ducks and the Jets met this season. It was a Jets victory, if you recall. Black Friday, I believe that's when it was. It was that afternoon game on Black Friday, right after U.S. Thanksgiving. The Jets went into Anaheim, took care of business against the Ducks, really dominated the Ducks in that game. And the Jets look to do the same thing tomorrow evening. A 9 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. Game, of course, also live on TSN 3. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. Ezzy, they're not only located in the Cordon Village Mall this coming weekend. They're also going to be at Cordon Community Center for Winterfest and Crescentwood Community Center. They're going to be at Winterfest this coming weekend, this Friday from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4, as well as being at River Heights Community Center. So maybe you're going to be out with the kids.
That's my community center.
That's my community center, too. Maybe you're going to be out.
Grew up in Tuxedo.
I had a lot of different community centers. I bounced around. Nobody wanted me. What can I say?
You're a bit of a community center hobo, is what you're saying?
A little bit. I'd go from, you know, I represented Sir John Franklin when, you know, in House League or whatever hockey I was
best
playing.
Best outdoor ice in the city is at SJF.
It has been for years, in fact. A classic outdoor rink there at Sir John Franklin, but River Heights spent a lot of time there as well, in Crescentwood and the whole nine yards.
Great basketball nets at River Heights.
I was never a basketball player.
And great tennis courts.
Tennis I can talk to you about. Yep. Tennis I can talk to you about. Anyways, maybe you're out with
the kids. You can talk 30 love.
I can talk 30 love. Maybe you're out this weekend with the kids. You know, supposed to be nice weather. You're out with the kids. You're at the community center. You know, like I said, it's Winterfest throughout the, you know, the different community centers. You're looking for something to eat. You don't want to get in the car. You don't want to drive all the way to, you know, to Bernstein's. Bernstein's going to be there for you. So just check them out all weekend long, you know, all day long, all night long at Cordon Village Mall, wherever you might be. Bernstein's Deli, they're there for you to help you out throughout this weekend. And of course, Poutine Fest is coming up. You did a taste test of the Bernstein's poutine.
Yep.
We'll have that for you on Saturday's show. I believe it's just you eating French fries on air. Is that
it's very
correct?
Good.
You eating the French fries or the
no,
poutine?
No, the poutine was very good. Yeah, we recorded a clip. We're going to play it on Saturday. Aaron was nice enough to have me down there and have a little sneak taste. Really good. So as you mentioned, Drew, we'll get that going Saturday.
There you go. Something to look forward to on Saturday. For now, though, the Jets and the Ducks, as we mentioned, they're going to do battle tomorrow evening. This is a Ducks team that's, you know, in danger of falling right out of the playoff race. They, you know, they're only a point behind the Calgary Flames for third spot in the Pacific Division. So that's the good news. Bad news is that they have the Los Angeles Kings in between themselves and the Flames. The Kings with a game in hand. And it gets a little bit worse when you look at Calgary, as they have two games in hand on the Anaheim Ducks. So this is a Ducks team that's really battling tooth and nail for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Probably, you know, a little bit of a disappointing season for Anaheim, but they've been riddled with injuries. They, you know, Ryan Kessler missed a whole lot of the first half of the season, really just came back right around Christmas. They've been without, you know, Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry at various times this season. And it's not a team, Ezzy, that scores a lot of goals. They're, you know, they only have three players total with double digits in goals at this point in the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that, Drew, specifically because you're talking about Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler missing big chunks of the season. Ryan Getzlaff, of course, gets more assists than he gets goals. But Kessler's a guy that is a perennial 20-goal guy. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's got 8 20-goal seasons under his belt. So, I mean, Kessler and Getzlaff are back now. They're healthy. And, you know, you mentioned Calgary's got the two games in hand. But, I mean, we're talking about 1 point here, and very likely, I shouldn't say very likely, but there's a chance that those games in hand games in hand don't mean anything. So, I mean, they're right in this. And, you know, we said this a couple of months back when the Anaheim Ducks were really struggling with injuries, when Kessler was already out and then Getzlaff had the injury. We said that as long as they could tread water, don't count the Anaheim Ducks out. At least that's what I said. And that's exactly what they did. They've won three of their last four games. They've won six of their last 10, 6-3-1 in their last 10. And, you know, JT Brown had his first goal as an Anaheim Duck. They claimed him off of waivers, of course, former Tampa Bay Lightning, Drew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Adam Henrique, I think, has done a really nice job there. He's already got 8 goals as a member of the Anaheim Ducks. And up the middle, Getzlaff, Kessler, and Henrique, very solid. Vermette, probably the best fourth-line center in the NHL. And Andrew Cogliano's back in the lineup now after serving that 2-game suspension. So you can say whatever you want about this Ducks team, because right now, Drew, you're right. I mean, this team, there's nothing, you know, sensational about this Ducks team. They're not scoring a lot of goals, except for, you know, the last 4 games, they've had games of 6 and 5 goals. But when you're talking about this team, I would never count them out just because they have so much firepower. And that defense, even though they had to trade Sammy Vatanen to get Adam Henrique, very solid. Cam Fowler, excellent defenseman. I think Josh Manson, obviously son of Dave Manson, very underrated defenseman. Brandon Montour, we know that he's been a revelation over the last couple of years coming up from the San Diego Gulls. You know, the goaltending, you know, do you have some question marks? I mean, I still think the goaltending is good enough to get this team into the playoffs. As far as tomorrow night goes, you know, this Ducks team, you know, we talked about the Sharks and how desperate they are. I mean, this Pacific Division is completely wide open. I mentioned it last segment. And sure, the Golden Knights are going to win the Pacific Division unless something miraculous happens. But when you're talking about the Ducks, the Sharks, the Flames, I mean, they're all clumped together within 2 or 3 points.
Yeah. The Kings.
So right now, I mean, this is crunch time for the Ducks.
There's 4 teams in the Pacific battling for the final 2 playoff spots. That's assuming none of them are going to
qualify. Yeah, LA. Sorry, I didn't throw LA in.
Assuming none of them are going to qualify for a wild card spot. And it's, well, I mean, I guess they're definitely within striking distance of Colorado, but most people figure that the Central Division is going to qualify 5 teams, and the Pacific's only going to qualify 3 teams. If you're the Ducks, Ezzie, how concerned? I mean, Corey Perry scored last night as the Ducks took care of business against the New York Rangers. That was his first goal that wasn't an empty net goal since December 5th. I mean, he'd been demoted last night to play on the fourth line with Chris Wagner and Antoine Vermette. Now, obviously, nobody expects that to be a long-term situation. But don't the Ducks have to get Corey Perry going to really be a threat towards the end of the year and even into the playoffs if they so qualify?
Yeah, they do. And that's because, you know, a lot of the offense, as you mentioned, Drew, has been coming from Rickard Rakell and Jacob Silverberg.
Yeah.
And
Andre Kasha is the other player who's getting double digits in goals for the Ducks.
Right. And, you know, you expect that obviously not to be the case as the season progresses. I mean, Kessler's going to get his goals. Corey Perry's obviously probably going to finish closer to 20 goals as opposed to closer to 10 goals. But right now, you know, he's struggling. And, you know, Corey Perry, you know, we've talked about this many times over the years. I mean, again, you know, we sometimes have short memories. The Anaheim Ducks were very close to going to the Stanley Cup Finals last year.
Yeah.
So you have to keep that in mind here. You can look at the standings and you can say, oh, well, you know, the Ducks, you know, are 1 point out of a playoff spot and, you know, Calgary has 2 games in hand. But we know how much things can change. Colorado was not in the playoff picture 2 months ago. All of a sudden, Colorado is holding down a wild card spot, right? So I'm just saying, I mean, this Anaheim Ducks team, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is still a very good team. Is it as good as last year's team? Probably not.
But if they make the playoffs, if they qualify, they're definitely that team you don't want to face. When you go Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrique, Vermette up the middle,
it might be the best 1-4 combo. Well, I guess that's not a combo. 1-4 punch.
1-4, yeah.
Right.
They're tremendous. They have tremendous depth up the middle. And sure, Kessler, it might not be the same Ryan Kessler, but come playoff time, you don't want to have to face him. And Ryan Getzlaff has definitely slowed down a little bit. He's still, you know, putting up the assists and, you know, actually having a very good year.
Drew, he's still one of the best centers in the league.
He's over a point a game. If it wasn't for the injury,
Getzlaff was absolutely dominant versus Edmonton in the playoffs last year.
I agreed. So this is a team
that
hasn't
lost anything.
This is the team that if the Ducks qualify for the playoffs and they're the reward for finishing first overall in the Central, if that's Nashville or Winnipeg or whomever it might be. That's not a reward at all. That's a tremendous punishment to have to go up against the Anaheim Ducks in the first round of the playoffs.
I don't think it matters where anybody finishes anymore.
You're right, it doesn't. That's why the regular season is completely meaningless.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously not meaningless in the sense that it determines who goes to the playoffs, but it's meaningless because of the seeding and the fact that, for example, in the Metropolitan Division,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to have some really good teams that finish low in the conference standings.
That's why the NHL needs to, I think, change their playoff format and make the regular season more meaningful.
Right.
I mean, I'm totally in favor of, I can't remember which league it is. Is it the Continental Hockey League that's doing the challenge system for the first round? Basically, if you finish first in your conference, you get to pick who your first round opponent is in the playoffs. So, you know, the Jets could pick the Dallas Stars. The Jets could pick the St. Louis Blues. It doesn't matter. The standings don't matter. It's you actually get a reward for finishing atop your conference. That's what the NHL should do. Think outside the box. Be unique among pro sports, the big four pro sports in North America, as opposed to having a meaningless 82-game regular season that's then a flip of a coin over a seven-game series or a best-of-seven series in the playoffs.
Yeah, Drew, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just one of those things I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think
the Board
either.
Of Governors is going to be down for that for a variety of reasons, but I agree. And, you know, I think that's actually not a bad thing that you have so many teams that have a chance to go far in the playoffs. So it doesn't matter if you finish first or fourth or eighth. Look at the Nashville Predators. Look at the 2012 LA Kings.
Sure.
They were an eighth seed, right? Look at the Calgary Flames back in 2004.
I know, but
doesn't matter what seed you are.
But shouldn't it? Shouldn't there be more of a reward for playing well over 82 games than there currently is in the NHL?
Yeah, I agree, but there's just so much parity.
Well, that's right.
And so I don't think it really matters sometimes.
Well, but if you're able to overcome the parity, I agree with you that the parity is tremendous. So if you've been able to overcome the parity for 82 games and be the king of the mountain, shouldn't you get a reward for being the king of the mountain for 82 games?
Right, and that reward is obviously playing the lowest seeded team and you get the extra home game, but the eighth seed in either conference is a pretty darn good team. It could be Anaheim in the West. It could be, I don't know, the New York Rangers in the East.
It's a relatively meaningless reward to have to play a team that's just as good as you are, and, you know, if not maybe a smidgen worse than you are. And so I'd be of the opinion, I'd be totally on board with having the NHL think outside the box on this one.
Actually, this year it could be the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, that's a hell of a reward then, isn't it? In any event, Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game show host. He joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio Wednesday night here at TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Josh Brewster. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, good evening, guys. You can keep Gimme Shelter playing if you want.
Most like people that. Would probably prefer to listen to that than to listen to us. That's true. You can never go wrong with a little Gimme Shelter.
No. Got to have Stones, Talking Heads, Clash, Ramones. Got to have the good stuff. I'm old school.
I'm on board with your musical choices right there, Josh, that's for sure. Obviously, Josh, having you on to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Ducks game, the second time these two teams are going to meet, first time since late in November, probably just about 2 months ago to be exact, since the Jets came into Anaheim and were able to defeat the Ducks on Black Friday. You know, this Anaheim Ducks team is, you know, treading water in that they're still certainly within reach of the Western Conference race. In that dogfight we were talking about the last segment, we figure four teams battling for the final two playoff spots in the Pacific Division. What's going to be the key for the Anaheim Ducks over the remaining 32, 33 games to make sure that they are one of those playoff teams?
Well, you know, the Ducks' issue, other than getting healthy, which their infirmary list was pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The Ducks' issue is putting the puck in the net, and there's simply too much talent on this club to be in the bottom third in terms of goals for. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you like to play with the puck too much on the power play and you need seven or eight passes before anybody does anything, things are going to pile up after a while. And, you know, there's other you know, little issues like, you know, everybody talks a big game about going to the slot and creating traffic and getting some bounces, but you have to do it. Randy Carlyle can't hold your hand, so it's all about, you know, Kessler does it all the time, but it's all about guys like Perry have to, you know, get back to doing it, and there's other guys who have to make the sacrifice and go into the tough areas. Like I said, there's just too much talent on the club for them to be struggling in the goals for department, and that's the one thing about the Ducks that's really unacceptable, because the goaltending is there, the defense is there, the talent is there. So if anything is going to deliver them to the playoffs and beyond, it's going to be goal scoring. And it's kind of funny to think with all that talent that it's been an issue, but it has.
Josh, you know, you just mentioned goal scoring, and JT Brown, who was claimed off of waivers from the Tampa Bay Lightning, he scored his first goal as a member of the Ducks. Is that why they claimed him off of waivers, to give them some extra scoring punch on the wing?
You know what I think? I think that they wanted a fourth liner who could bring maybe a little bit more energy, a little bit more physicality than Logan Shaw was giving them. I think it's a fourth line gig, and I don't know how many points Brown will produce, but I know he's got a lot of energy, and he's good at going into tough areas with speed, and that can't hurt. Now, last night, he took full advantage of a second-line opportunity when Corey Perry was demoted to the fourth line. And there's a wake-up call for you. Mm-hmm. And Brown put the puck right over Lundqvist's shoulder, between his ear and his shoulder, which is a very hard spot to hit, and it's a very hard spot for a goalie to make a save. So, you know, who knows if Brown has a bit more of an offensive upside than we might have thought. The Ducks will certainly welcome it. I don't think that they're expecting any great shakes, but I think it is something where they were looking to upgrade the fourth line right wing position with a guy who, you know, maybe a little quicker, little more physical, and a little more energy, and very, very caffeinated sort of play, the way he plays, and, you know, that's not going to hurt.
Josh Brewster is our guest on NHL This Week. Josh covers the Anaheim Ducks as their post-game radio show host. Josh, you mentioned a fourth liner. Last night, the fourth line winger was a guy named Corey Perry. Now, nobody expects that to last long term, but he'd certainly been struggling to score. He was able to get off the schneid last night with a goal, his first non-empty net goal since December. What has been why is Corey Perry struggling to that degree? This is a guy that you don't associate with problems putting the puck in the net.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, he never really had an extra step on anybody, but now he's minus two or three steps. And, you know, this is a guy who won the Hart Trophy. He scored a ton of goals. I think it's really kind of the man in the mirror for Corey Perry, and he needs to, you know, to step it up and get into what made him a great player, which is that pest around the net, and the exact guy I was talking about when we started, who is he's not a dirty player, but he's certainly a pest, and he's good down low, and he can shoot. And you know, it's interesting because he had a rough season last year, but then in the playoffs he scored some of the biggest goals in franchise history, big overtime goals, you know, and big game winning goals. So you know, it's still there. I think that, you know, the way he's played. And I kind of look at Crosby this way too. How long is a career going to be? And is it more of a Forsberg kind of a guy? You know, a guy who played a real tough brand of game, but with a ton of skill. And, you know, Corey Perry might just be slowing down. And Randy's not going to bench him, I don't think. So I think fourth line is as much a wake-up call as it's going to get. But the fact is, Andre Kasha earned his top-line minutes, and you know, Perry just needs to get, look, I remember Solani when he had lost two or three steps and he still scored 48 goals or 40 goals and they won the cup. just go to the right areas, be in the right place, and be ready. Now, last night, I'll say this. I thought moving him to the fourth line was actually an upgrade because Chris Wagner, for example, was looking for him all night long. And I think that his line mates do owe it to him to be looking for him, and he owes it to the club to be, you know, getting into those tough areas. I just think it's a little more of a challenge because I really think he has lost a couple of steps at least.
Josh, about a week and a half ago, Andrew Cogliano made headlines across the hockey world as his Iron Man streak came to an end after 800-plus games. And obviously, as you know, Andrew Cogliano was very emotional after that incident in which Adrian Kempe suffered that hit to the head. He scored a goal last night. How has he responded in the three games that he's been back since he had that two-game suspension?
Well, I think that, you know, he's been very emotional. But, you know, his game hasn't changed. This is a guy I've never seen him take a shift off, ever. And he's a guy who goes at top speed into all the toughest areas of the ice. He's always a passionate guy. He is everything you could possibly hope for in a hockey player. The only thing that he doesn't have is finish. He's not a great shooter. But boy, everything else about his game is exquisite. Now, I'm biased, obviously, because my paycheck says Ducks. But I will tell you that, and I like George Parros a lot. I've known him for many years. They blew this call. And this is a very marginal call, in my view. And I think that the reputation of the player has got to factor in. I think the fact that Kempe's head hit the back of Cogliano's jersey, Cogliano's shoulders are down, his elbows are down, and, you know, I had a big problem with this because I've seen much worse be fined or much worse receive no suspension. So he moves on, it happens, and, you know, as far as their zero-tolerance mission goes, I think that it's spotty at best, and I've wanted it to be real consistent with Parros, but it was a very tough game to officiate. I think Andrew Cogliano is very much the heart and soul player. I think he deserves to be up there with Doug Jarvis and Craig Ramsey and Steve Larmer. And there's a different level of respect for guys who have done what Gary Unger, guys like that have done. And, you know, I just thought it was a horrible call. But then again, I admit my bias. But he's exactly what you want in a hockey player. There's just no, there's not an ounce that he doesn't leave out on the ice every night.
I bet the decision to suspend Andrew Cogliano didn't get any easier to swallow when everybody saw Dustin Brown go unsuspended for his hit on Justin Schultz.
You know, it's funny, in my comments, I was going to rattle off a litany of things that I thought were suspendable that never received a suspension, so I'll just skip that for now, but that's one of them. Yeah, I mean, that's one of them. Even Curtis McDermott taking Andre Kasha's head off and guys can cuss for like 11 games and nothing happens. We could go down the line. It's too bad. But you know what? Look, I'm very much with Ken Dryden. When Ken Dryden, he was on my show, and he said, look, in his book, it's like Sidney Crosby says, if you know that when you hit a guy in the head with your stick, you are going to the box. Nobody even argues it, by the way. Nobody argues that call, ever. Mm-hmm. They just go to the box, and that's the end of it. And as Dryden was saying, why don't we make it where if a part of your body hits the guy's head, you go to the box? I think it's a bit of wishful thinking, but, you know, I'm all about getting, you know, the headshots or the hits from behind, the dirty stuff. I'm all about getting that out of the game. But I think in a marginal case like Cogliano, and it was marginal at best, I think that the reputation of the player has to be taken into consideration. There's nobody runs that guy. He's respected throughout the league. He doesn't run anyone. He doesn't get run. And I thought it was a low moment.
Josh Brewster is our guest on NHL This Week. He's the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, we had the oh-so-rare hockey trade in season between the Ducks and the Devils this season. It was a few months ago now. Adam Henrique for Sammy Vatanen. How has Henrique looked up the middle for the Ducks?
Well, I mean, this was a great deal for the Ducks. And if the Ducks have anything, it's they have a lot of defensive prospects. And a lot, you know, you look at Nashville, I would say the Ducks are Nashville's equal in terms of developing defensemen. You look around Justin Schultz and Jake Gardner, and there's all kinds of guys playing D who came up through Anaheim's draft. Adam Henrique is a great pickup, and the price they paid Sammy Vatanen was a substantial one. Henrique now is out there with Nick Ritchie, who is on the end of his entry-level deal. This has to work because Ritchie is now at a big career crossroads. Because it's got to work because they didn't give all this up for Henrique for it not to work. So now Silverberg has been out there. He was put down in that line, and Andre Kasha has played next to him. They're going to find a way, come hell or high water, to make sure that Henrique's skills are maximized. And if you know if they can do that, they're going to be a very tough team in the stretch. Because when you look at who they had in the lineup against like L.A. the first time, two times they played L.A., Derek Grant was their top-line center. Antoine Vermette was their second-line center. Dennis Rasmussen was their third-line center. He's in San Diego now, and Derek Grant is a healthy scratch. So now their centers are Getzlaf, Kessler, Henrique, and Vermette. So I think as a GM, I think Bob Murray's done a very good job making sure that they're good down the middle. And, you know, like I said, my first point, there's no reason for goals for it to suffer when you can say you have those kind of guys.
Josh, there's about a month to go before the NHL trade deadline coming up in end of February. As we talked about, the Ducks have already made some moves. Do you expect some more to come, or
yes.
Do you think the Ducks? Okay, and what do you expect? What do you expect the Ducks to do prior to the trade deadline next month?
You know it's going to be a name that I'm not going to think of here, right? It's going to be some guy who I'm not thinking of. I want to say I think they're going to pull in Evander Kane, you know, but it'll be some guy who I don't know who it is. But here's the deal with the Ducks. The window's closing. We talked about Corey Perry and his age. He's 32. Getzlaf is 32. They both turned 33. Kessler just comes off major hip surgery here. And, you know, he's of an advanced age, too. They're all from that big 2003 draft. And, you know, the window is on the way down. And if the Ducks... if the Ducks look like they really are going to threaten for a playoff position and they're really going to get it moving and they're going to make the playoffs, I think Bob Murray pulls, if he has to deal away a guy like Jacob Larson, if he has to deal away a guy like a prospect like Max Jones or, God forbid, Sam Steele, don't be so sure he wouldn't do it if he can get his hands on a guy like Evander Kane because, like I said, I mean, this is a club was awfully close to the Cup final. And then they lose Raquel, and they lost Eves, and they lost John Gibson, and then they had to go try to finish off the Predators. This is a club that was awfully close to that final, and Getzlaf was awfully close to Conn Smythe Trophy, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, if you're Bob Murray, you got to go for it, and you got to go for it now. And so I think that you can be sure that there's going to be some help on the wing, not on defense, not in the goal. It's going to be on the wing.
Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Guys, always honored to be on. Give me a call anytime. Thanks so much.
Will do, Josh. Thanks again. When we come back, the latest edition of TSN's Insider Trading, we'll have that for you. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
A little drama on Wednesday night in Chicago. A quiet night in the NHL. 6 seconds into 3-on-3 overtime, William Nylander is the victim of a penalty. He's awarded a penalty shot, and he makes no mistake going backhand on, I can't see if that's Jeff Glass or if that's Anton Forsberg.
But Jeff Glass.
Jeff Glass. So the Leafs victorious in Chicago, 3-2 on a penalty shot in overtime, 6 seconds into overtime. So how do you like them apples? Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The insiders at TSN, you know who they all are. Speaking of which, Bob McKenzie, going to start joining the big show Monday and Friday mornings, starting, I believe, this coming Monday, 7 a.m. Bob McKenzie, every Monday and Friday morning, going to be on the big show. So set your alarm clocks if you're not an early riser, but be sure to tune in and hear the Bob Father every Monday and Friday on the big show, starting at 7 a.m., starting this coming Monday. Anyways, he's one of the TSN hockey insiders. They all got together for another round of insider trading. This is what they had to say.
Well, let's see. Last week, the insiders were talking about the offside challenges and the controversy are there. Now we're talking about goalie interference from last night and that Leafs-Colorado game. Bob did his mid-season coaches poll. How do they feel about the thing that's named after them?
Well, with 23 of the 31 coaches responding so far, more to come, I would suggest that for the most part, it's widespread dissatisfaction with the way coaches' challenge is going. I asked them about goalie interference challenge. You want to keep it? You want to can it? You want to modify it? Of the 23, 11 said keep it. 2 said get rid of it entirely. 10 say modify it. We'll talk about the modification in a moment. But look at the offside. They really hate this offside challenge. Only 2 of the 23 coaches want to keep it as it currently is. 7 of them want to can it entirely, and 14 want to modify it. Now, in terms of the modification, what it really boils down to is the coaches would like hockey operations to take over the full decision-making on these video reviews on coaches' challenge, take it out of the referee's hands, the linesman's hands. They want hockey ops in Toronto to do it. I don't see that happening because this was all done in conjunction with the referees and linesmen, and I'd be very surprised if the NHL goes down that road.
Bit of a mess right now. 1 month and 3 days until Trade Center. Names we're going to hear a lot about for 200, Drakes.
Well, we're going to start with Rick Nash and Michael Grabner of the New York Rangers. These are two players that are expected to be highly sought after. And, you know, the New York Rangers now are leaning towards being open for business from a trade front perspective because of their recent slide. But it's going to take a lot to acquire Rick Nash, and he has yet to be asked for his 12-team trade list. Another player to keep an eye out for is, of course, Ryan McDonagh. There's been a lot of trade speculation around the Rangers defenseman. It's more likely that if he gets dealt, it's in the summer on the draft floor. But again, Jeff Gorton of the New York Rangers is at least willing to listen.
Well, when the season began, I think most of us thought Colorado would be a seller entering the trade deadline. Probably not going to be the case. Second most surprising team of the year after Las Vegas, the Avalanche on a 10-game win streak. And yes, they could be buyers before the deadline. Now, here's where the internal debate resides, I think, where Joe Sakic and the Avalanche brass is. They've got some amazing team chemistry in that room. They bring in a guy that can sort of take a guy away from his minutes. That's what they're debating internally. But at the end of the day, they've identified a need for a winger. They'll decide about a week out whether or not to splurge and add a player in Colorado, last year's 30th place team. The team they play Tuesday night, Montreal, they're not going to be adding for this year, that is for sure. Next week, Mark Bergevin and the rest of his front office staff, they're going to finalize their trade deadline strategy. Thomas Plekanec, the only notable UFA, so it's not about selling, but certainly open-minded as Montreal as they continue to talk to a lot of teams about fixing this roster going into next year.
Drakes, I think you brought that term own rental into the mix a few years ago. So I don't know what the term is when you get a guy back from long-term injury around the deadline, but it certainly helps your team. Christopher Stieg in Calgary, when's he back?
Yeah, it could feel like a trade. The best case scenario is early to mid-March. Now, he was in New York this week seeing the surgeon that did the hip surgery on Christopher Stieg a while back. The good news is he's got the green light to start skating in 10 days to 2 weeks. But again, based on the full rehab and assuming that everything goes well, you know, worst case scenario looks like he could be back in the Flames lineup mid-March.
Nashville's never scared to add. We know that about David Poile, and I think they're going to try and add a top six winger before the trade deadline. Now, for now, they just want to get to the All-Star break and take a deep breath. Half their forwards have been injured between the start of the season and now, but certainly want to add a top six winger. That's the priority. Now, whether or not they get in on Max Pacioretty or Mike Hoffman or Vander Kane, they haven't made that decision yet. They want to get the other side of the Tampa All-Star break.
And the Detroit Red Wings have let teams around the National Hockey League know that defenseman Xavier Ouellette is available. He's playing a little less than 14 minutes over 33 games over the course of the season, a former second-round pick.
Hockey fans in Seattle have to be looking at Vegas and saying, I want a team right now. Where are we at with Seattle?
Well, there's no guarantee that the formal application of expansion will be submitted by Bonnerman and Jerry Bruckheimer this week before the Board of Governors meeting as part of the All-Star festivities. It's possible, but it wouldn't get rubber stamped this weekend anyway. There's a lot of due diligence ahead and a $10 million expansion check that has to get written.
Vegas odds are out on the favorite names for the Seattle franchise. Emeralds right now is the going favorite.
That's the TSN Insiders with the latest edition of Insider Trading. Seattle Emeralds, you like that one?
No, I like Seattle Sockeyes.
Seattle Sockeyes, eh? What about the Kraken?
No.
No, the Seattle Kraken? I saw that one as an option.
I like the Sea Lions.
The Sea Lions?
I like the alliteration, Drew.
You only like Sea Lions because you were just in San Francisco and you probably went down to Fisherman's Wharf and saw the Sea Lions.
I didn't see any Sea Lions, but I was in Fisherman's Wharf.
Really? You didn't go to the... There's that specific pier that has the Sea Lions.
No, didn't see them.
Hmm, interesting. Hmm.
Emeralds? That's horrible.
Well, I didn't say I didn't like it. I don't like it at all.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Green. New York Rangers.
The Emerald City.
Yeah. They were talked about a lot on the insider trading there. The Rangers are currently out of a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
By what, 1 point?
2 points. But with all the free agents that they have, would you consider being a seller if you're the Rangers?
I don't know how the Rangers could be a seller at this point. I mean, you're looking at Rick Nash and Michael Grabner, maybe, that you're trying to move. But
a lot of scuttlebutt around Ryan McDonagh, apparently. Maybe he's available on a trade. He's not a rental. I mean, he's a guy who's got some term on his contract.
You're in the playoff race, though. I know people see the standings and they say, oh, they're 2 points out of a playoff spot, so they're not going to be a playoff team. Drew, there's how much hockey left here?
Well, look, I don't think it's the function that they're not going to be a playoff team, but are they?
Well, if you're going to be a playoff team or you're going to be in the playoff race from now until the end of the season, how can you be a seller?
Well, you could be a seller if you don't think you're good enough to, even if at your peak, if you kept everybody, are you good enough to beat the best teams in the Eastern Conference? I don't think the Rangers are. I think the Rangers probably know that they'd be lucky to squeak in and maybe they win a round, but they're not good enough to beat the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So
I think if
you try and get an asset for Rick Nash.
I think if they're still in the playoff race a week before the trade deadline,
mm-hmm.
they make minor moves or they're a buyer.
Okay. That's fair enough. We'll find out a week before the trade deadline to see if you're right or not.
If they're 5 or 6 points out of it,
then they trade people.
Sure.
Bob McKenzie talked about coaches' challenge, more controversy tonight.
Yeah,
in
I don't want to talk about that. I mean, we've talked about this how many times?
I
can't talk about the offs. I've already said, put me in the camp that just says get rid of these challenges. I think it's ruining the game.
I don't disagree with you whatsoever. The offside challenges, I think, here's the problem. The offside challenge is stupid because how many times do the referees really blow it blatantly? Very rarely. Or right. Linesmen, pardon me. I mean, how many times do they miss an egregious offside? Not very often. And then the goaltender interference one, well, nobody knows what the hell goaltender interference is. I mean, there's controversy tonight in the Toronto-Chicago game again. There was controversy, you know, every time Toronto loses on the goaltender interference, there's controversy. So, I mean, just figure it out. I mean, that's the get me a clear. The referees are being put into an impossible situation because more often than not, their first instinct on the ice is probably their right one. These refs, they're not Johnny come latelys.
Well, and generally speaking, the refs know what goalie interference is, Drew, and they're going to make mistakes once in a while. But as far as I'm concerned, with all of the reviews, I mean, the offsides and all of that, I mean, I have no problem. You know, with a referee making a mistake, a linesman, I should say, making a mistake once in a while, but it's just got out of control, as you said.
Yeah.
We don't really know what goalie interference is because sometimes we think, you know, a goal is going to be overturned and it stands,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa.
You'd think the Edmonton Oilers hit rock bottom last night. They lost 5-0 at home to the Buffalo Sabres. I can't count the number of times we've said the Oilers have hit rock bottom before. We'll talk about it with Dave Jamieson up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio on this Wednesday evening. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. His name is Dave Jamieson. Dave, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Nice to be with you guys.
Our pleasure, Dave. I was just saying off air to Ezra that I can't count the number of times I've used the words rock bottom in an interview with you as it pertains to the Edmonton Oilers. But, you know, if you lose 5-0 to the Buffalo Sabres on home ice, I think it's beyond rock bottom. I think you should be eligible to be relegated out of the NHL.
Yes, there's some sort of a demotion coming. Yeah, it feels like that. I'll tell you what. Today on my show, I did an hour and 45 minutes of open line and took texts, none of which were positive. A couple of fans, God bless them, and you're going to get that, I guess, in a Canadian NHL city. They remain positive. They remain stalwart that the Oilers will figure it out. But listen, if they had a modest three-game winning streak going into last night, the Buffalo Sabres are not a good team, but neither are the Oilers. So let's not fool ourselves. But if you could look at a game, look at an opponent for the Oilers and say, you know what, that should be a game that they should win. Buffalo had played in Calgary the night before. They'd won in overtime. And Edmonton came out, and in a season of bad performances, that had to have been, by all measure, the worst game the Oilers have played this year, and that is saying a lot.
Dave, you know, we saw today in practice Todd McLellan had the line blender going, something we're familiar with Paul Maurice here in Winnipeg. Milan Lucic was skating on the fourth line. Patrick Maroon was off that top line with Connor McDavid. And, you know, Milan Lucic is a guy that obviously hasn't had the same season that he had last year. But is this just something that we should come to expect here from Todd McLellan with, you know, the team struggling and trying to find that right mix?
Nobody's got any answers, and this is not an indictment of Todd McLellan, who I think is an excellent coach. His record would tell you that, and he's worthy of respect. And it's funny, you know, someone asked me earlier tonight, who is being sort of singled out from the herd in terms of fan dissatisfaction? Is it Chiarelli? Is it McLellan? And I think Peter Chiarelli is bearing the brunt of the fan upset and disappointment in the team because he is the architect. And Craig Button on our station last night said, I used it on the air today, is that this is a team that is deeply flawed and now it's getting exposed for what it isn't as opposed to what it is.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on NHL This Week. Dave is with TSN 1260 in Edmonton. We're discussing the Oilers and their most recent defeat at the hands of the Buffalo Sabres. You know, if the team is broken, Dave, at this point in time, I mean, obviously it's too late to fix it for this season, but he's handed out a lot of contracts that are probably untradeable, so how does he fix it for next season?
That is a fine and I think unanswerable question. I don't know. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was having arguably his best year, most complete year, let's put it that way, as an NHL player, really playing very good hockey, smart hockey, contributing offensively, really good defensively, winning faceoffs, and then he gets hurt. He's out 5 to 6 weeks with a broken rib and a sternum injury. So he was a guy that, as well as he was playing, if you were going to make a trade, an impactful trade that could change the fortunes, he looked to be the guy, and he carries a $6 million price tag, would be the guy that, you know, is movable. Milan Lucic, as much as I liked the move when they got him, looks to be a millstone around the Oilers' neck right now just because of the contract he has and the way he's playing. I mean, Milan Lucic, when he is impactful and doing good things on the ice, can help this team, could help a lot of teams, but line rushes, they go to die. When he's got the puck, the play dies. And he's better than that, and I'm sure he knows that he can be better than that. But right now, you know, Connor McDavid told the media last night after the game, we're having trouble getting up for games. And that is a stinging indictment from the best player in the league about where this team is at.
Dave, does last night's 5-0 loss to the Sabres hurt so bad because the Oilers had won the previous three games, including a win over Vegas, a big win over the Canucks, and it looked like if the Oilers were going to make a run, it was going to be now?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I mean, this is a team that won four games going into the Christmas break. They came back, and then they didn't look as if they'd won any games before the Christmas break. Then they had that brief, and everything about this Oilers team is brief. Any success they have is short-lived. It's unfathomable to fans in Edmonton how the Colorado Avalanche could win 10 in a row, and how other teams, including the Vegas Knights, can roll up 7, 6, 5 wins in a row. This team can get to 4, and it's over. Get to 3, it's over. They've lost. They've been shut out 5-0 three times this year. They reserve their worst hockey for Rogers' Place. They are historically bad penalty killing at home. I mean, NHL historically bad, not just franchise bad. league bad in terms of killing penalties at home, and on the road, I believe they're sitting second best. So it's illogic at its very worst here, because nobody can explain it, least of all the coach or the players.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on NHL This Week, we're discussing the Edmonton Oilers. And Dave, you mentioned the penalty kill. And, I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's comical how bad it is. Yeah. And, I mean, there's no rational explanation. I mean, maybe you have a rational explanation.
No.
To be that good on the road and that bad at home, it's got to be mental, right? I mean, it can't be on-ice performance.
And I don't know if Matt Hendricks listens to your show. I hope he does.
I only assume he does.
I'm going to give him a massive compliment. Since his departure, he was much loved here by Oiler fans. And even though he was a bit player last year, some of that through injury, some of that through deployment of personnel, the name Matt Hendricks comes up so much now in Edmonton about how he is missed, especially on the penalty kill, as a guy that was dogged in pursuit of the puck, also a guy that was well-respected by his teammates, who always sold out to make the play, who was fearless in blocking shots, just a fearless hockey player. And now, you know, that he's gone, people go, wow, that's a missing ingredient on this team. You know, we can debate that. I know he's welcomed by the Jets, and they love having him there, but they miss him dearly here in Edmonton. Certainly the fans do, and I think his teammates do as well.
You know, Dave, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the Oilers' loss last night, and there's a lot of negativity, you know, around this team right now, but we don't want to just focus on the negative. We want to focus on the positive. Has the most positive aspect of the Oilers as of late, Jesse Puljujarvi, is up to 9 goals on the year now?
I think that's certainly one of them. His play and seeming, you know, to get some comfort here at the pro level. He's going to be here now. I don't think there's any thought that he shouldn't be anywhere else but Edmonton. They need him here, and he's getting more and more comfortable both with the style of play in the NHL and with living in North America and speaking English and so on and so forth. So that would be also. But I really think the evolution of Darnell Nurse. Now, this is refer to him as the best player on defense for the Oilers, which is slightly different than saying the best defenseman, because, you know, Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson playing at their best are better defensemen right now than where Darnell Nurse is, who's, you know, very early in his NHL career. But that guy is showing again and again and again that any talk that he would be a movable asset is idiotic. He has got such great upside that Darnell Nurse, I think, will form a big part of the core of this defense moving forward. It's going to look different. It better look different, but he's going to be right there at the front of that group.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on NHL This Week. Dave is with TSN 1260 in Edmonton. He's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show, hence the title and everything else. Dave, you know, I was reading today, or, you know, after last night's defeat, there were some pundits saying, you know, maybe the Oilers shouldn't have given Connor McDavid the captaincy when they did. You know, to me, that's ridiculous, because he's the best player in the league. You're building your franchise around him. Are serious people really discussing, you know, if Connor McDavid should, if it was too soon for him to receive the captaincy when he did?
Well, let's just sort of break that apart. I don't know if serious people are. People are. Some of them texted my show today and said, hey, too much too soon for this guy. Which is wrong. He is the correct person. He's the only person who should be wearing the C for now and for as long as he's with this franchise. But here in Edmonton, we've built up a lot of folklore and mythology around a couple of guys you may have heard of. One of them is Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier. Now, Mark Messier has a well-deserved reputation as one of the best leaders, not just in hockey but in sports, for his ability to inspire both through his talent, which was incredible, but also, you know, if push came to shove, he was more than happy to shove. And he was often violent on the ice to opponents, and we have the belief that Messier, when called upon, could get pretty rugged with teammates who weren't delivering. Well, Connor McDavid just turned 21, and if you've ever seen him in interviews, if you've ever, I mean, he is shy, withdrawn, he's not terribly outgoing. He lets his play do all of the talking necessary. Now, at 21, he's still evolving as a person with a personality and a hockey player. Now, I'm reluctant to be critical of a guy in his position doing what he does and continues to do. He's still performing, not at last year's pace, but, you know, look at the group he's got around him. And people who say that he shouldn't have the C and that his contract, which will kick in next year at $10 million, is too much, is that contract within the year is going to look like it's a bargain. It already does, in my estimation, that he is and will be an underpaid superstar, but we've had that before in hockey.
You know, Dave, on the weekend, the Oilers announced that former All-Star and Cup-winning defenseman Paul Coffey was going to be the team's skills development coach. It was a very badly kept secret because Paul Coffey has been around the organization, as you know. Specifically, though, why did they bring Coffey in? And do you think all the criticism is warranted that, you know, the Oilers, it's still an old boys club? And,
yeah.
And what is Paul Coffey actually going to bring to this organization? I don't subscribe to that belief, by the way.
Well, likewise, but here I come at it from a couple of different angles, which I guess we get to do in Sports Talk Radio. One is the guy they chose, his credentials are impeccable. If you're not old enough to remember what Paul Coffey did as a player, I ask you to go back and use something called YouTube, and you will enjoy what you see, because there were few who were more creative or more skilled at that position. Bobby Orr may have redefined offensive defensemen, but Paul Coffey refined it, and he was incredible to watch. All of that said, and the position is needed. I believe that some hockey, you know, coaches, there need to be more coaches in the NHL in terms of, you know, working with players. It's so specialized now, they need more, not less. So I agree with the idea of that. But here's the perception the Oilers will fight until they no longer exist as the Oilers, is that too many of the guys from that era of the Oilers, the Kevin Lowes, McTavish was there for a good chunk of it as well. Gretzky, I mean, lives above us all. I mean, he's if he's here, everybody feels very good. But the too many of that old guard is coming back. And it's just a perception thing because but, you know, we live with that because they've come through 10 years where the fate of this franchise was guided by a good portion of the old boys club, Kevin Lowe and so on and so forth. And now with the hiring of Chiarelli and McClellan, I think that signaled to a lot of fans that, okay, that period of Oilerdom is over. And the Coffey hiring, I mean, ultimately it'll pass. And if Paul Coffey's able to make, you know, a positive change, no one's going to care what era he played for. They're just going to care about the results. But in the here and now, the initial blowback against the team was, hey, I thought we were over with this stuff. Like, well, who's next? Mike Krushelnicki?
Mark Lamb, that was the joke I made on Saturday, on our show on Saturday.
Yeah.
But
yes.
You know, last question for you, Dave. I mean, obviously, sure. this is a write-off of a season at this point. The Oilers are likely going to sell whatever assets they can sell at the trade deadline. You know, where does the improvement come next year for this team?
Oh God, that's also a tough but maybe unanswerable question, because the cupboards are quite bare. I mean, mm-hmm. bare in terms of next year help. I mean, Kyler Yamamoto got, what, 8-9 games in with the Oilers at the start of the year. I mean, that was nice. It was great. It got him acclimated to the NHL. But if you're looking to him to come in next year and be an impactful NHL player, well, I mean, that may happen, but I think it highly likely that it won't. Defensive help. Again, we know what that position demands in terms of developing into an NHL quality caliber NHL defenseman. It's going to take a while. So you've got Ethan Bear down there. You've got a couple of others who are certainly, going to, if all plays out, have good careers, but it's not now. And the Oilers have backed themselves into a win-now thing. Like, nobody is going to stomach the idea of, hey, you'll never guess what's coming in 3 years. No, that's not going to go, because you think about it. The Oilers, Connor McDavid's first year cut short by the broken clavicle. Last year, brilliance. This year, he's going to have an individually good year, but they've squandered the third year, the last year on his entry-level contract. Now the big money kicks in. The big money's kicked in for Draisaitl. It's not going to get cheaper to find good help around here. So they've really put themselves in a tough spot.
Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on our sister station, TSN 1260. He's our go-to Edmonton Oilers guest. Dave, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always good to chat, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Dave. When we come back, we discuss Brad Marchand. He got suspended. Is it enough? Does he need more? A lot of talk about disciplinary action throughout the NHL. That's up next on NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Ezzy, I want to send out a hearty congratulations to Brad Marchand. He is on to his sixth suspension now as a player in the NHL after he was suspended for 5 games earlier this afternoon for his hit on Marcus Johansson. Johansson suffered another concussion, his second of the season and the third of his career, as a result of Marchand's vicious elbow to the head. Your thoughts, Ezzy, on 5 games for Brad Marchand. Did he get what he deserved? Did he deserve more? And will he ever learn?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, when you're talking about Brad Marchand, we've, you know, talked about him quite a bit on the show. He's one of the best players in the league. And what frustrates me, I was actually watching that game live. As you know, I'm a Devils fan. They were playing the Devils last night, of course. And, you know, you wonder why he does this stuff, because he was having a great game.
Mm-hmm. He scored the game-winning goal,
and for me, he just needs to take this stuff out of his game, but it almost becomes a situation where you don't know if he's ever going to take this stuff out of his game, because he's been a veteran of this league for many years now. He's had a lot of success with the Bruins. He's had a lot of success with Team Canada at the international level, and he just can't seem to get away from this stuff. And for this particular elbow, I mean, it's dirty. And he has the suspension history, as you mentioned. He's been suspended 5 times in the past. So for me, 5 games makes sense when you factor that in. And it goes back to what I said before. I just don't know why he keeps doing this, you know, and he knows that he's going to face discipline from the NHL Department of Player Safety. And he just doesn't need to do this because, as we talked about, you know, he is a top player for his team. Mm-hmm. And he continues to hurt his team by missing games.
My favorite part about this, and I say it completely tongue-in-cheek because I don't have a favorite part about this, is how full of bleep Marchand is with his post-game comments. Here it is, this is what he said according to Joe Haggerty of NBC Boston. Quote, "What happened? I don't know. He got hurt. I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened. I took a shot and I tumbled down and he was hurt. So I don't know what happened there, but hopefully he's okay." I mean, come on. There's no doubt that he knew exactly what he was doing on this play. Sometimes you can make an argument that things are incidental or that occasionally, you know, just bad results happen on the ice. This was a deliberate attempt to injure an opponent with an elbow to an unsuspecting player's head. Craig Button of TSN weighed in on the hit by Marchand. Interesting to note that yesterday, Button thought it should have just been a 4-game suspension. Here's what his comments were today after rewatching the video over and over again.
With the announcement of the 5 games and the fact that Marchand was a repeat offender, or is a repeat offender, I should say, Craig, are you surprised that they allotted 5 games for that?
Well, I knew the most they could give him is 5 games because he wasn't offered an in-person hearing, so it had to be 5 or less. I mean, when I saw the play last night, I thought it was 4 games based on a repeat offender. But I'll tell you what, you look at this again and again and again, and we get the benefit of looking at it again and again and again. But, I mean, that is so unacceptable that maybe he should have had it in person, and maybe they should have given him 8 to 10 games. Because as great a player as Brad Marchand is, that play is the opposite of great. It's dirty. It doesn't belong in the game. It's unnecessary. And to me, this is a young man, maybe not so young anymore, that just doesn't learn. And so throw the book at him. Lock him up.
And that's the challenge with Brad Marchand is he's turned the corner as an elite player. And if you're the Boston Bruins, you're saying you don't want to take the edge and bite out of somebody's game, but you have to get some more smarts into it because you need him in the lineup. The accidental on purpose plays that he does, this isn't accidental anymore. He knows exactly what he's doing. And the challenge with Brad Marchand is if you take some of that out of his game, are you taking some of the edge that he plays with and unpredictability? And I'll go back, and it's a different era. Marc Messier played with that edge, but he didn't get suspended and didn't have those egregious plays. I know you can call it up on YouTube. Mike Modano would have a different thought process with that. Huh. But what I'm saying is that Brad Marchand can play in that gray area, but he's crossed the line too many times. And does George Parros – at five games, I think he got off lucky here.
I do
because
too.
If George Parros wants to make a statement in the concussion era, if that's a dime, if that's 10 games, now he's going to have to rethink his thought process, as Brad Marchand is, as far as the way that he plays. But if you're the Boston Bruins, I think somewhere along the line you're saying, we don't want the edge out of his game, but he has to clear up the stupidity.
If you're an elite player, you want him in your lineup more often than not. So you got to sit him down and give him a little chat. Now, Marchand's rap sheet has five previous suspensions on it. He's missed a total of 14 games and forfeited over $480,000 because of those suspensions.
Tessa Bonhomme, Craig Button, and Jamie McLennan with their analysis on the suspension to Marchand. If Button and McLennan, who have all played the game, or Button, of course, being an executive, and McLennan playing in the game, they know it's a deliberate hit. They come out and say it's a deliberate hit, and for Marchand to say anything different is obviously false. I mean, it seems like this is another case. George Parros blew this one.
I don't know if he blew it, but, I mean, for me, it's not about whether he meant to do it or not. He did it.
Yeah.
And he continues to do it. For me, what's so mind-boggling is that Brad Marchand's arguably a Hart Trophy candidate this year. We're not talking about a fourth liner or a fringe NHLer. We're talking about a top 20 player in the league. To me, that's what's dumbfounding about Marchand and how he continues to do this, because he doesn't need to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. He's it's like he can't process rational behavior. Because, I mean, there's nothing going on in that play. He sees a vulnerable player, and he just throws out his elbow, and he tries to take his head off.
It's nothing to do with the play, and he just doesn't need to do it. He doesn't need to be that player that he was 4 or 5 years ago. He's a guy that they rely on to score and produce every night.
This hurts. I mean, I know you're going to lose him out of your lineup for five games, so that's you're going to affect the Boston Bruins. But if you're the New Jersey Devils, you don't know when Marcus Johansson's going to be coming back. Second concussion of the season.
Well, the Devils are pissed off right now.
Devils are in second place in the Metropolitan Division. They're tied with the Philadelphia Flyers. They're in a battle in the second most competitive division in the NHL. Nobody expected the Devils to be at that point, to be in second place at this point in time. They acquired Marcus Johansson in the offseason. He was supposed to be a key member of their team. He's been out of the lineup, in and out of the lineup all season long. Second concussion in a couple months. You don't know when he's coming back. You need all hands on deck just to make the playoffs. And Brad Marchand only gets five games, and you lose a player indefinitely? If you're the Devils, you have to be absolutely furious and fuming about this decision and about the hit.
Sure, but I mean, to me, five games, seven games, 10 games... I mean, we've been doing this show for almost 9 years now.
Nothing changes?
Does anything ever change?
Nope. And the NHL just buries their head right in the sand. When we come back, Josh Cooper joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 42 Portage Avenue.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The one, the only, the 2017 winner of the Illegal Curve Male Guest of the Year, Joshua Cooper, joins us on the program. Josh, congratulations. Where does winning that award rank on your accomplishments, given you had a child this past year?
I mean, I'm going to go child, marriage, and winning the Ezzy.
Okay, so you're third on the list. Are you sure you don't want to, you know, maybe rethink that and maybe slot it somewhere above the marriage or...
So hold on, I beat out your bar mitzvah?
Yeah, I've had a very boring life, guys. Seriously, I haven't really done much.
My question, Josh, and we'll get into the hockey talk, is how have you managed to train your child to not disturb your watching of The Bachelor?
Well, I literally just finished watching it from Monday. So we started watching a bit on Monday, and then I covered a game for the Associated Press last night in Anaheim, so we didn't get to keep watching it last night. We weren't able to finish it because we got to get to bed early because he gets up so early every day.
Yeah.
And then he handed out the final rose to Crystal pretty much right before your producer called.
Okay. Well, I don't know what that means at all, and I don't really care either, to be perfectly honest. But go ahead.
If you want a crash course, the Arizona Coyotes are actually doing something really funny with it. They're unleashing Paul Bissonnette into the locker room to talk to players about the most recent episodes of The Bachelor and do their review. Because The Bachelor is actually from Scottsdale, Arizona. So he's so far... Who are the guys who show up every week? I mean, it's Martin Ook's on there every week. Jason Demers is on there every week. I forget who else, but Demers does one hell of a Crystal impression. I mean, it's hilarious. And Bissonnette, you could tell, he just basically went to the team and was like, I'm going to do this. It's going to be ridiculous, and you're going to love it. And it gets a ton of retweets. It's really, really funny. I mean, maybe he's trying to get on the show at some point. I don't know. I wouldn't put anything past this on that front, but really good job by him. It's really funny. And I think it's must-see internet, viewing, so to speak, every week.
You know, Josh, I watched an episode recently, and, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not feeling it this year. I miss Nick.
I have to disagree 100%. Sorry. To me, Ari is kind of what the show should go for. Like, he's a race car driver. He's good looking. He's independently wealthy. He has a career. I still have no idea what Nick does. And I mean, it was kind of funny. It was almost like watching Nick was kind of like why I got into the show to begin with, was the first season. Where I saw was Ben Flanick's season, where he really, there was nothing going on there with him. He was like an amateur vinter in Sonoma, and just all these women were falling over him. And I'm just like, what does this guy offer? Like, there's nothing there.
Nick's more relatable, though, Josh. More relatable.
I mean, yes, to a degree. And apparently, I listened to like a reality TV show podcast a few times, and apparently, he went on a few days with Jennifer Love Hewitt, so maybe there was something there. I have no idea. But that was more Nick's season to me. But, I mean, kind of to sort of bring it back to hockey to some degree, I mean, you have, obviously, the Coyotes doing this thing, and JJ from Caitlin's season is the color analyst for the Denver men's hockey team. So there's a bit of a hockey connection there with this show.
That sound you just heard was my eyes rolling in the back of my head. So we're going to move it to the world of hockey. Josh.
By the way, Josh, you know Nick and Vanessa broke up.
A long time ago, yeah. But the interesting thing about this season,
never going to end, is it?
That last year you knew that Vanessa was a front runner because she was like bilingual, educated, like, you know, was a special ed teacher. And this year I watch and I'm just like, I have no idea who he's going to pick, so... That adds some intrigue. Anyway, let's get to hockey.
Well, hang on, last quick question. When you say bilingual, when you're referencing The Bachelor, that just means they can speak with more than three syllables in a word, right? They're not actually speaking a different language than English. They just use bigger, more syllables in it.
come to think of it, she was trilingual because she was from Montreal, so she spoke French, I think Italian, and English. And also the other thing, too, is I think that she went out with Brendan Gallagher for a little bit, from what I read in the gossip columns, after she and Nick broke up. So there's that also, maybe?
You know, you're just going to have to leave me in suspense on that topic, Josh. You recently wrote, if you don't mind me shifting the conversation, about the Vegas Golden Knights for Bleacher Report, talking about their success. Their success on the ice is, of course, incredible, but their success off the ice as well, and why it's succeeding as a pro sports market. What did you find out, or what did you sort of come up with in your thesis for your article for Bleacher Report?
Well, I really, at least in my opinion, I subscribe to a lot of the theories of John Vrooman, who is a Vanderbilt sports economist. I went to Vanderbilt. He's actually a professor of mine there, and he's also one of the most famous sports economists in the United States.
We know you went to Vanderbilt, Josh.
Yeah, I just had to bring it up that I took his class, though. I mean,
I'm wearing my Wildcat sweatshirt, Josh.
Name drop.
I'm wearing my Wildcat sweatshirt right now.
Well, I also took the class pass-fail, so, I mean, you know, I don't really have an economic brain. But, like, I listened a lot to what he has to say about this stuff, and one of the things that, that he mentioned is the fact that Vegas is heavily dependent on tourism, heavily dependent on gaming, not exactly two very stable pillars of a local economy, and yet they're enjoying this honeymoon period that, is you have to start to sit back and wonder. This isn't coming from him. I mean, his thoughts were more the local economic situation in Vegas. This is coming from me more so now. You have this honeymoon period that is so extreme and so extraordinary that it's kind of got everybody rethinking Vegas as a market, and has us all kind of sitting here now being like, well, okay, they got the NFL coming. Now we all think that's going to be a slam dunk success with the Raiders. They're talking about the NBA. I mean, MLB, there was sort of some talks of that in some of the people I talk with. I mean, I know that the mayor of Vegas, Carolyn Goodman, when I spoke to her, was very bullish on the NBA because they have the, the summer league there or something like that for a lot of their prospects. And the NHL has sort of opened the floodgates into this market where people really believe that Vegas is going to be a slam dunk pro sports market. I mean, I don't know really if that is the case. I mean, it's the 42nd biggest TV market in the United States, the 29th biggest population center in regards to metropolitan areas in the country. I mean, I don't know if you could really see it expanding to such a degree because, yes, even though they have 42 million visitors every year, I mean, it's still a market that's very susceptible to ups and downs of the United States economy. But at least for now, it's looking amazing, and it's looking like such an incredible move by the NHL that, I mean, why wouldn't they want to continue to expand? I mean, you know, Seattle is obviously a market that there's a lot of mutual interest there. Houston, I think, was reported by The Athletic a little bit ago. I mean, there's just all sorts of – it could, in some respects, just based on the success the Golden Knights have had, because also the other thing the NHL did was it made the deepest expansion draft in the history of the league, which has led to a situation where you have people like William Karlsson are having career years and all these players who had talent but never had opportunity or really performing. And it's led to this incredible surge there. So, you know, I personally just kind of from the people I talk to and everything else, like I do err on the side of caution there. I still think that, look, I mean, they haven't even gone through a full year of having a team, and they've been good since they got there. So, I think you just sort of have to wait it out. But it's gone so fantastically well, and has been arguably one of the five biggest sports stories in the United States this year. That you know, you just have to look at the market again and say maybe this can work better here than we thought. But I think the other issue, too, is that Vegas and a lot of the pro sports leagues can't get too greedy and can't sort of look at it and say, okay, like we can do all this, when really your market can only kind of handle just maybe one or two teams. I mean, I don't think that Vegas should be a three- or four-sport town. I mean, I think two is probably maxed out. But we'll see. Maybe other people know more than I do on that.
Josh, moving west to Los Angeles, where you currently reside, the Kings have lost 7 of their last 8 games. They're on the ice right now in Calgary against the Flames. What's going on with this team right now?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, this is a game. They're down 1-0 right now against Calgary, but I mean, this is a game they absolutely need. I mean, they have been just kind of struggling just to the All-Star break, and you know, you sort of thought that maybe the their off week or their bye week would have helped recharge the batteries, but it definitely didn't do that. And I think at the end of the day, it just kind of comes down to the fact that they really need Jeff Carter back in the lineup. And you can be without a player of his capability for a certain amount of time, but you can't do an entire season without Jeff Carter. Like, he is a legitimate stud of a hockey player. He does everything for that team. And Andrei Kopitar is an amazing first-line center, and Jeff Carter is basically a 1A. He'd be a first-line center on, like, maybe 26th of the teams in the NHL or something like that. I mean, they really, really need him back in the lineup. Adrian Kempe, and part of the reason why the Kings were able to withstand Carter's absence was the fact that Kempe at the beginning really had a phenomenal start to the season and was able to kind of deal with the dips and dives and peaks and valleys in the NHL season and kind of stay consistent. And you're starting to see that consistency fall off a little bit. Because it is hard to kind of step in as a young guy and get those big matchups that Jeff Carter always used to get. And, I mean, it's going to suit him well in the long run, but at least this year, I mean, the Kings really need Jeff Carter back in the lineup. And I think that that's the biggest thing for them to get them back in order and get them back moving towards a playoff position. Because all you really have to do is look down the freeway to Anaheim. With their guys now healthy, they're starting to play way better. And I know the Jets play them tomorrow. And they're a team that shows that when your guys get healthy, you know, when you have your full complement of players, you will probably do pretty well. And I think that's what the Kings need with Carter. They just need him back in the lineup because while they did a good job without him, they can't get back to where they were without him, in my opinion.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned the Anaheim Ducks, and you covered last night's game, as you said, for the Associated Press, the Ducks manhandling the New York Rangers, the Jets into Anaheim tomorrow night. Is this Ducks team ready to make the run to get back into a playoff spot? I mean, they were so close to representing the Western Conference last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. It just seems like everyone's waiting for this Ducks team. Now they're healthy, with the exception of Patrick Eves. Everyone's ready for them to make that run and become a bona fide contender in the West.
It's crazy you mentioned the Patrick Eves thing. It's like they're without a 30-goal scorer from last year, and they're playing a lot. I mean, when he eventually comes back, I mean, you're going to have a very deep team. But watching that game last night, everything in my mind just goes back to Ryan Getzlaf and just the fact that this guy is so good. I mean, it's you know, he is, in my opinion, when he's on, and he has been on since, I feel like, maybe the midpoint of last year. I mean, he is Hall of Fame level. Like, you mention him in regards to what he can do on the ice, at least in my opinion, with Sidney Crosby. I mean, as far as centers go, he is just a legitimate, unbelievable hockey player. And when he's playing at this level, and when you're able to complement him with Ryan Kessler, and the fact that Adam Henrique really has become Mr. Fix-It for that team up and down its forward lineup, and their defense looks good. And I mean, John Gibson's pretty solid in net. And if he falters, you have Ryan Miller, who seems a bit rejuvenated this year. I mean, they're ready and primed to make another run. I mean, they are a really good hockey team. And for a while, I mean, again, they were injured, but I just sort of wondered, are they going to do it again? Like, are they really going to do the thing where they just don't play well in the first half and turn it on after the Christmas break? And I mean, they just again look like that team that really could have gone to the Stanley Cup final last year. I mean, they look excellent right now, and I wouldn't be shocked if they end up winning the Pacific, because, you know, we talked about Vegas earlier. I don't see them holding on. Who knows? But to me, Anaheim just has everyone in the right position right now and going really well.
Josh Cooper is one of our very good friends. He's the 2017 Ezzy winner for Illegal Curve Male Guest of the Year. And my understanding, Josh, is you're opening up your home to us if we ever visit Los Angeles with a place
always
to stay.
Always, always. You'll have to listen to crying.
That's okay. I cry myself to sleep every night.
Yeah. More from me than the kid, but yeah.
It's okay.
He woke up at 3 a.m. the other day and basically did not go back to sleep. It was unbelievably miserable.
But
it was incredible just what that was like. I mean, even in his like first few weeks of life when he was up a lot, I don't think we ever had a situation where he just got up and stayed up. You know, basically for like 18 hours straight.
I don't know if if your son's like my son, Josh, but sometimes he wakes up in the middle of the night, and of course, it's terrible because you want to go back to bed and everything else, and so you're trying to soothe him or you're trying to get him to go back to bed, and he just looks up at you and he smiles, and it's the most infuriating thing in the world, but it's also the most adorable thing in the world because, your son is smiling at you, so your heart is filled with love, but at the same time, you have this burning rage inside of you because you just want him to go to sleep, and all he's doing is smiling at you as if he's mocking you to your face.
He's like the Joker. Like, that's pretty much what it is. Like, there's and that happened to me at 3 a.m. It's like I go in the room and it's pitch black and I'm like, kid, what's up? And he's like, ah! Like, just has this massive grin on his face. And I'm like, oh, man, I love you, but I need to sleep.
It's, yeah, totally relatable. And as he's soon enough, you can experience what Josh and I are discussing. Josh, thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys. Always appreciate the time.
We'll do it again real soon.
Cheers, Josh.
Josh Cooper, a good friend of ours. When we come back, we got one final segment on this Wednesday evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday night. You're listening to NHL This Week. A reminder, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show will come to you at 9 a.m. here on this fine station.
A normal start time.
A normal start time of 9 a.m. High-level discussions are underway. Negotiations, lawyers are at the table. My understanding is there's almost been an agreement made. We're going to take calls on Saturday's show. The show that doesn't take calls is going to take calls on Saturday.
People, by the way,
heaven help me,
ask me all the time,
why don't you take calls?
Why don't we take more calls? And that's why we're going to take calls. That's why we talked about it earlier today, Drew.
Yes.
Texting back and forth.
Yes.
Because, as you mentioned, usually we take calls twice, maybe three times a year. And we thought because
not
it's
not even. Usually like once.
Well, I mean, it varies from year to year. I think we used to take calls during the first couple of Jet season a little bit more often, but especially with the All-Star break.
It's a nice time to take calls.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're going to take calls on Saturday's show, so you can get ready for that, get your smart questions ready, and we'll discuss it Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This final segment of today's program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, that's a long time, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, not tonight, pardon me, this weekend at Rumors, Kate Quigley. She's a stand-up comedian, model, host, and actress. She's currently the host of Undercover on Playboy TV and is, quote, the Anthony Bourdain of the sex world. So you're combining two of my favorite things, sex and comedy. So Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club is clearly the place to be on this weekend. Shows start tomorrow at 7:45, and then you got two shows on Friday and two shows on Saturday. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Don't miss out on seeing Kate Quigley. Good name, Quigley.
That's a pretty
Quigley.
Good name. Yep.
Yeah, it's a good word.
Kind of sounds like Quagmire.
Sure, if you want to go with, that's what, Family Guy?
Yep.
Yeah. Quigley almost sounds like Quimby from The Simpsons, Mayor Quimby, if you will. But anyways, Kate Quigley, as I've clearly lost my mind at 10:56 p.m. on Wednesday night, Kate Quigley here at Rumors this weekend. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard, a quiet Wednesday.
Or a Quigley look.
Did I say Quigley? No, I said quickly, right? Yeah, okay. But that's clever. That was very funny of you. A quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard on a quiet Wednesday night.
There's only two games,
NHL.
Drew.
I said it's going to be a quick look. In Chicago, we mentioned it, William Nylander scores 6 seconds into overtime on a penalty shot. giving the Maple Leafs a 3-2 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks. Blackhawks, as a still confident they're going to bounce back and get in there in the Central Division. They're falling further and further behind. They're now 7 points behind the Colorado Avalanche, and they have three teams between them and the Avs for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference.
Well, I'll tell you this much. They're not catching the Jets, the Predators, or the Blues, but I'm still not confident enough that they're going to miss the playoffs to count them out. And I mean, let's be honest here, Colorado winning those 10 games, I mean, that's, nobody saw that coming.
Nobody
let's
saw
be
that
honest
coming.
Here, but it happened. But I'm not going to completely write them off.
Okay.
But I mean, it's getting close to that portion of the season where you have to start making up those points, because if we're talking about this a month from now at the end of February and there's still 5 or 6 points out of that last wild card spot,
it's too late.
It's a different story.
And a game that's still going on in Calgary, the Flames have a 1-0 lead after 40 minutes against the Los Angeles Kings.
The Kings need to win tonight, too.
They do. A lot of teams needing wins. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to Josh Brewster, Dave Jameson, and Josh Cooper for joining us. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris, doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.